What's up, everybody? Oh my God, it's your boy Nick Dees. I am back with another episode, and this week's guest is the one and only Mr. Soul Joel himself. This guy, man, I tell you, it was great getting to talk to him, sit and hang out, you know, talk comedy, talk producing shows, just talk about the world right now in stand-up. And this guy, man, he is honestly and truly, he is changing the game right now for stand-up comedy. We talk about it, but he had a club prior to COVID, brick and mortar, actual like hard space that he was using. And, you know, when COVID happened, you had to adapt. And he was really, honestly, in my opinion, he's the one person right now who has just been changing the game for stand-up. He started doing shows outside in a field, put a dome over it. Now it's heated. He's killing it, man. And all these like big comics keep doing shows at his spot. So that's really kind of how I heard about it. And I decided I was going to hit him up and see what it was like, how that worked, how that came about. So yeah, so today's guest, like I said, today's guest is Soul Joel. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So I hope you guys enjoy, and let's go into it. Hell yeah. Well, the first person I've had on who probably is doing way more shows and putting on more shows than everybody else that's been on. So you're a first for that, especially with the world being over. So that's pretty dope. So Joel, I appreciate you taking the time to come on, man. I know you're busy. You just announced a bunch of shit going on.
Yeah, man. Well, I appreciate you having me on, man. That's a big intro. I hope the rest of the episode can live up to the hype.
Yeah, I mean, you know, worst case scenario, it'll be like just how everything else is for me. It's all downhill. It's like it starts on a good note and then it's like, ah, shit. All right. Well, there it goes. I remember like this time last year being like, yeah, man, 2020, this is the year I'm going to get on the road and I'm going to try and make moves and like do shows out of town and stuff as much as possible. And then the world was like, nah, fuck you.
Well, that's pretty much, I had the same mind frame because I not only had my own comedy club, opened it for the first time after being in the business for 14 years, now 15 years, I managed talent and had, I created my own circuit through my production company, Soul Joel Productions, probably had about 10 different rooms that were going on like a monthly basis, doing over 200 shows a year, full staff and then literally open up my comedy club in November 1st, 2019, one day a week, 4 months later, going 5 days a week at the end of February. And then literally two weeks later, shut down. So, you know, you always talk about multiple level and multiple streams of income. Well, 100% of them came to a screeching halt on March 13th.
Fuck, dude, that's brutal.
Yeah. But I thought the same thing. I'm like, 2020 is awesome. It's amazing. And my dad actually lives for business. He lives in Shenzhen, China, right next to Hong Kong. And, you know, they got the wave of the, I mean, obviously it started there and they got hit before the Chinese New Year, which is like a year ago now, like January, February. And I remember talking to him like at the end of February, he goes, well, get ready. He goes, you're going to get shut down. And I was like, I just remember being so angry at my dad, going, no way, there's no way that we're going to shut down. How could this happen? And our comedy club is on the Schuylkill River in the suburbs of Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. Across the river is another county. It's like, you know, Brooklyn and Queens or whatever. Sure. Different. And so that county across the river got shut down a week later, March 20th. And all I could think about was if I was just 100 yards the other direction, I thought about thinking, opening up another club and just being, I'm like, this is so unfair, but we got shut down a week before everybody else.
God damn.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So I feel like that's definitely something that you had just like in the works. I mean, you're talking 200 shows a year leading up to that. That's fucking huge, man.
Yeah. I started, you know, up in New York. I went to college in Staten Island, got my MBA and just slowly got into comedy. I started honestly producing my own shows just to create my own stage time. I'm like, well, if I'm going to be able to do bringers, I might as well be making the money myself. I know all these comics. So I started the Soul Joe family tours, produced shows wherever I had family members, South Jersey, where I grew up, Pittsburgh, where I was born, and all four of my grandparents are from. And so that's how I started Soul Joe Productions. And I, you know, as of last year, I produced shows in 21 different states.
God damn. So,
yeah. Just hustling, man. Just working hard.
How long did it take you to really kind of shift from stand up to producer?
So, at the time that I left corporate America in May, it'll be 12 years. This May, it'll be 12 years. And I knew, you know, I made over $100,000 a year doing pharmaceutical sales, car, gas, insurance, 401k. I knew I was funny. You know, I could probably be a above average or a killer feature. I was never going to be a headliner. But at that, I was like, you know, I'm a big guy, man. I like to eat. I knew straight stand-up wasn't going to be it, but I was always the friend that enjoyed organizing like trips, bachelor parties, reunions. So I kind of applied that, and I got my MBA. I applied those skill sets and just started producing my own shows. So I knew when I left corporate America that that's kind of the direction I had to head. It probably took 2 or 3 years after that, probably 2011, 2012, where I really was like, all right, I can manage talent. I could produce all these shows, but I have to pick one. I still enjoy going up and hosting my own shows every once in a while. And now even in the quarantine, I've kind of outgrown that, where I don't even deserve to be on my own shows because they've gotten great. So, but I don't have that ego where I'm like, all right, well, I gotta take a step back, and what's the best for the show? Well, the best for this thing for the show is I got so many things on my mind prior to show. I can't just take off that hat, you know, figuratively and now, you know, flip and be funny. So
yeah, that makes sense though. Cause I think that's like one of the things a lot of people that put on shows struggle with. Cause it's kind of like you said, is you really start putting shows together in a way to like, this is my guaranteed stage time. This is my chance that I know for a fact I can put a show together with people that I like, people that I respect, and people that enjoy the craft. And you're like, this is my goal to help me get better. And that's like when I started, I had that goal within 6 months. I was like, I want to start a room. I want to have a room. I'm probably going to suck. But it was like, I just wanted that to be a goal for my first year, is like to start a show. Cause I knew that the easiest way to start getting more reps in and get better is constantly just have my own stage time that I get to dictate when it happens.
Yeah. And I think that has helped me empathize and put myself in the comic shoes. I know what it's like to be a comic, to perform and struggle to try to like, be like, all right, where's my next paycheck coming? You know, you're a freelance, you know, you're only getting paid when you do shows. You know, there's snow on the ground. If you're not doing a show, well, you know, how are you making money? So you have to find, you know, figure it out. So I during the pandemic, I started paying more than I typically paid just because I know a lot of comics haven't been working. And I just believe in paying it forward. So I just, I always put the talent first. And I know hopefully one day when this is all over, they won't forget me.
I definitely think at this point now you're really kind of at the front of the train on this, honestly. Like, cause I've heard it on a bunch of different podcasts. It's like, you know, all these big comics, like New York guys and Northeast comics, you know, talking about all summer doing all the Soul Joel shows. So like right. when I saw you guys post the picture that I drew of Jay, I was like, hell yeah, I'm gonna hit this dude up and be like, hey man, I want to talk comedy and pick your brain on shit. Cause I was like, dude, that's killer. I was like, hell yeah, man. All right. But that's like a huge thing, is cause so I'm in Virginia, and like we have a Funny Bone where I'm at. And then we have like a smaller C club, and that's it. Everything else is just bar shows. And it was interesting to see each market try to get ahead of what was happening, as far as like trying to find out how their area is going to pull off, like either, you know, outdoor shows or, you know, online stuff or whatever the case may be. And like, it was interesting to see like a few people did it here. And then you look at New York and everybody was doing rooftops and outdoor shit, stuff in the park. And then I started seeing all the Soul Joel stuff. And I'm like looking at all the flyers being like, damn, these are big name comics consistently going through that. I'm like, damn, that's insane.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the guys that I manage and I work with a lot, Casey Arora, he told me when this all started, he's like, if you're not going after, he's like, right now you have the pick of the litter. And this is before I booked any shows. And, you know, I've met Dave Attell, but to finally have gotten him on one of my shows, he's like, if you're not trying to get him, he's like, then you're not trying. He goes, what are we doing this for? So I kind of had that mindset to just keep going bigger and better. And, you know, last week we just booked Russell Peters and DL Hughley, Andrew Dice Clay, Jim Brewer.
I saw that.
Yeah. Joe List brought Louis C.K. twice for a drop in on a Wednesday night. So now people, you know, on our social media, people are getting upset. They're like, why wasn't this advertised? It's like, we said special guests. We've literally never said special guests. So who did you think was going to drop in? Like, we've never said, like, sometimes it's like I'm a hype man because I'm a producer. Like, I love reading like and watching P.T. Barnum stuff. Like,
sure,
just a great promoter. But I never want to think I'm pulling the wool off of people over people's eyes. I always do it, you know, with integrity. So, So I was like, special guest. And then we did it again. And I was like, buy tickets to this show. Can't be any more. I can't be any more obvious than this. And then people literally commented. They're like, I will never doubt you ever again.
That's twice. It's like, dude, I did it the first time and said special guest and did it the second time. It's like, anyone of you guys that didn't get tickets, that's your fault at this point.
Right, right, right. Exactly.
That's my thing, though. Like, on a Wednesday night, to just go to a show, even in the middle of everything that's happening right now, it's like you go to a show and List and then Louis shows up.
Right.
That's huge. That's even if it weren't for pandemic, like if it wasn't for COVID and you were just going to a show on a Wednesday night and you're going expecting to see Joe List headline and he brings Louis with him, you're like, holy shit. All right. That is a huge get. That is a huge present.
So here's what happened. My sister, who helps me out and plans the fundraisers and the special events, she put our festival together back in the summertime. And it was 17 days from July 31st to August 16th. And it was 17 straight nights to make up for every week that we were closed indoors. And so it's a creative way to try to come back.
Sure.
And I told her what the comics were. We sent out the offers and then she put them in order. Coincidentally, we had Joe List kick it off. Now, I had booked him 2 years ago, right before he opened up at the comedy club. We were at the Valley Forge Casino. And I booked him, and the week before and the week after, he had just made his Tonight Show debut, and the week after was Netflix. But when you're working with a comic on that level, you know, they always got something in the works, but you don't know what it is. It's not public. So when Joe List showed up, he was debuting his latest comedy special the following week. And again, we didn't know that. So the following week he started going on a media tour. And of course they don't want to just like you and I just talking. You don't want to just talk about shows. Hey, what are you coming up? What do you want to plug? They want some stories. So they're like, hey, Joe, what have you been up to? And literally because it was the pandemic, Soul Joel's was the only show that he did.
Yep.
So I was, my phone was blowing up. People like, hey, yo, Lish just talked about you in the Preston and Steve Morning Show in Philadelphia, the Jim and Sam Show on Sirius XM, and like just constantly blowing up. A week later, he was down in Texas with his wife, Sarah, who's also a comic, and he took a picture of her from the back, and she had our festival shirt on. And he goes, hey, I'm in Texas visiting my in-laws. This is my wife, Sarah. She's got a Soul Joel shirt on. If you're in the Philadelphia area, you got to check out Soul Joel's. Great comedy shows. If not, listen to my pod. So I was like, I sent a screenshot to him and I go, List, you know, I can't ever thank you enough for all the promotion that you've done just for free. Like, he doesn't owe me anything, man. I already paid him for the gig. He had a great time. And I was like, let me book you again or give you a Christmas present. He goes, oh, that sounds good, buddy. Hey, by the way, do you have any interest in booking Louis? I'm like, what? Yes. And because Louis hadn't done a show yet, he didn't want to headline.
Sure.
So I said, all right, well, let's do this, man. let's call it Joe List and Friends. That's how we came up with the idea. I won't say a word, and we'll just do a Joe. He goes, all right, as long as you don't post on social media, Louis said he'll come with me.
Ah, shit. I think it froze. Oh, we're in the middle of the juice. You were giving me the juice and then you froze. Or I think I froze.
Well, I don't know, but all right, so should I just start?
Yeah, you can so you didn't post it on the internet. Joe said he's gonna bring Louis. That's where you were.
So Joe List literally said, he goes, just don't post it online, social media. If you do that, Louis's gonna show up. So I didn't think about it. Like, I didn't think it was actually going to happen until I saw Louis there. So we kept it under wraps. I might have told a couple of, like, loyal fans. I'm like, hey, there's a chance this might happen. Don't say anything. So out of 200 people, maybe 50 knew about it. There was 200 people that night on a Wednesday night in September. It was amazing. And the other special guest ended up being Ari Shaffir, who had headlined about 10 days before. So the car pulls up. Ari gets out the front, the passenger side. Joe List and his wife gets out the back, and I'm like, oh, I can't believe it. I go, Louis's not here. Louis gets out the front. I'm like, Louis drove. So he ended up driving, and then just hearing them all talk about it. So it was Louis's first set back. So it went, James Mattern, who has been hosting all of our shows, the best host in New York and probably arguably the whole country. He hosted, then Sarah, Louis went on, then Ari and Joe. And my respect for Joe List that night went through the roof, because not only is he headlining the show following Louis and Ari, but I mean, Ari was in full season form. He had been headlining shows. And you have, for lack of a better word, but like a legend. Sure. Like the crowd already reacted. You can hear. I'll never forget, there's this black dude that worked at Valley Forge Casino, and it was his first time coming to one of my shows outside the casino. Very charismatic dude. And when the host, James Mattern, goes, please welcome, you all know him, special guest, Louis C.K. Even if people knew he was coming, they didn't think he was going to be that early in the show. So you just hear this dude go, no, Louis, he's here? Okay, Soul Joe. Okay, I see you. And the rest of the people, if they didn't know, their jaw just dropped, and they were just taking it all in. They're like, "Oh my, I can't believe in this town." Which, by the way, Royersford, it's a borough, not even a town; it's a borough. It has 4,750 people, and it's just for them to be like, "I can't believe I just saw for $20, Louis C.K. just dropped in at Soul Joe's," and it just. From then on in, it's like, you know what? We had the street credit. We just had to tell Jim Brewer. Now Louis just stopped in. It's like no one was too good for it. And we just pay it forward and provide stage time and an opportunity to work and earn money, you know, for these comedians.
That's huge, man. You're feeding the right mouths 100%. That's nuts though. $20 and to fucking sit there and just assume you're like Joe List. Worth $20, by all means. My girlfriend and I saw him and Sarah in D.C. at the D.C. Draft House, which actually just closed like just closed like a month or two ago. D.C. Draft House.
That was a great room.
Yeah, it was a great room. I have been lucky enough to get on stage there a handful of times. It's a killer room. But yeah, they just closed. They still have their art. So they have Arlington Draft House, which is still open, and they've been doing stuff. But yeah, we saw the two of them there and it was great. So it's like, yeah, they're definitely worth the money. But then you throw into the mix, you know, Ari and Louis, you're like, holy shit. You feel bad being like, only $20? Okay.
Right. Well, and that's the thing with now every other month we've been rotating Joe List. And then the next month it'll be Mark Norman.
Yep.
So Joe was just here last week. Next week's going to be for February is Norman. And no matter who they bring, it's just always a solid lineup. You're like, for $20 to see all these comics, they always have between 4 to 5 comedians on every show. You just can't, on a Wednesday night, you can't beat it. I mean, you can't beat it on a Friday or Saturday, but certainly on a Wednesday, you're like, that's crazy. $5 for each comic, maybe less. Nuts.
That's so sick. Yeah, I listen to their podcast a lot, and it was cool hearing them talk, like hearing Joe mention the first Louis gig, like riding up in the car and them talking about like getting ice cream after the show and shit like that.
So there, that ice cream, ironically, well, not ironically, probably, but they became one of our sponsors. And so I talked to them about it. 'Cause I told them they, you know, they don't listen to the podcast, so they didn't know, but the husband and wife were like, yeah, that's Louis. And they were like, we didn't want to ask for a picture. We wanted to play it cool. I was like, no, I think you played it cool. I was like, you know, not to ask for a picture, but they were like, they were literally closed, and they opened it back up, and Louis came up to the window and then was like, come on, guys. And it was like kids just coming out of the car, like, I can't believe they opened it just for us.
God. Yeah. Moments like that where you're like, only in this world, like this crazy, like, you know, rock star adjacent world where you're like, oh yeah, we get the fucking, they open the whole place back up just for a couple cones, which is nuts.
And they had just opened about 6 to 8 weeks prior to that story. So for them, it was like, they literally opened their doors and then had, you know, Louis C.K. be one of their customers and tipped them crazy.
Oh, I bet. You tell me like, hey, I'm sorry, we're closed. And then you just go, hey, well, I appreciate it, whatever. And they're like, ah, never mind. Here we go. We'll open up for you. At that point, you're like, just take what I've got. Just have it. You're talking to like
get some ice cream.
Earlier you said something about like liking food. I'm like, yeah, I like comedy, but I like food more. I'm like 100%. If I was in that car ride with an ice cream cone, I'd be like, I don't care how good the show is. I would just be like, this is good ice cream. That's all that, yep. Like, that's all that matters.
Worlds are colliding, buddy.
Oh, 100%. So did you start stand up in New York or did you start?
Yeah. So I grew up in South Jersey, a suburb of Philadelphia, went to college, right out of high school, 18 years old, into New York, Staten Island at Wagner College. Then started in sales, eventually got into pharmaceutical sales, went back into school to get my MBA, thought I was going to like climb the corporate ladder. A 2-year program. I was working full time and going to school full time. And I got like, you know, urged by my classmates to try stand up for the first time. So I ended up trying it and just, you know, on a Monday night, open mic, and just never wanted to stop, man. Got that wave of laughter and that adrenaline rush. And so now in May, it'll be 15 years since I started comedy.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool to see. It's not often that, so I've been doing this, you know, about 70 episodes. When this comes out, this will be the 70th episode, but it's okay. Like, I haven't had anyone on that has made the transition from being a comic to like a club owner, or like, I've had people on that obviously like produce their own shows and stuff like that, but that's a completely different, you know, 'cause you're seeing both sides of the coin on that. It's like, you know how comics want to be treated. You know what it's like to be a comic. You know what it's like to have to like try to get people to show up for your shows. But then you also have the flip side of that is, you know, the business element of it. You know what needs to be done. So it's like, you know, I feel like the success of all the shows that you've been doing outside have really been derivative of that.
Yeah. 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 No, absolutely. Well, if you would have interviewed me 2 years ago, I still would have been not a club owner. So this was the seventh time that I've tried to open up a club, and whether it was the financing or the town's politics or getting the support, it worked out where I'm at now. The borough council recruited me as part of the revitalization process of the borough to open up my own space. And it was just all the timing and all the, you know, everything, the ducks just all fell in a row, and all the pieces of the puzzle all fell into place, and we're able to open up. So, and I just knew it was time to kind of, you know, not focus on being a comic and just strictly focus on managing and producing.
That's cool though. It's interesting to hear you talk about it like that. 'Cause you kind of sound like you knew that you had that moment where you're like, yeah, this is the fork in the road, and this is the route that I want to go on. 'Cause like, I have a buddy who, he and I've talked about it a lot, and he's like, I know that I'm an okay comic. Like, I know that I'm an okay comic, but he's like, I just love putting shows together. Like, I love putting on shows, and I love curating like a really good lineup and getting a bunch of people there to see it. He's like, that for me is more fulfilling than actually being on the show. He's like, I'll host it because I like to actually still be able to do stand up. But he's like, my goal is just putting on killer shows, which is, you know, you see people that kind of make that transition of like, I love stand up, but I would much rather watch everybody succeed and build my success that way.
Yeah, well, so I told you when I left corporate America at the time, in the car was James Madden and Giannis Pappas, who I was managing at the time. He kind of told me, he's like, listen, you know, do you want to be okay at something? He goes, if you go into producing and focus all of your energy, he goes, you have the chance to be the best that ever was. And ever, he goes, that's how you get butterflies. That's how, like, that's what really gets your juices flowing. And it was kind of that realization that I was like, yeah, why not? Like, why be mediocre when I could be the best? And just always treating the talent fairly and kind of putting all my energy into that, it came to fruition. But I just, if it wasn't for him and like the School of Hard Knocks, because his mentor was Donnell Rawlings, and he kind of had a bunch of advice that he gave Giannis, and Giannis then, you know, paid it forward. And with me, it's like, you know, it is what it is. You got to focus and be honest with yourself and come to that realization. And I did. And just always just kind of from there on in kind of focused on that.
When did you start really like picking up steam on the management aspect of things?
Probably not until about 3 years ago. It definitely took a while. I just... When I first started, I just didn't have the connections in the industry and that mindset of what to do and how properly, because I just didn't have that many years of experience in the business. But now I know what it takes, and I kind of have a better picture of what a manager is and the right connections to do so. I had Shuley Agar, who was a writer, just recently left the Howard Stern Show, was writer producer for the Stern Show. I had him for all of 2019 and 2020 booked all over the country, and Aunt Mary Pat, who's a drag queen based out of Philadelphia. So between them, they were both in different places every weekend. So prior to all this, and now it's starting to slowly open back up again, and we're getting back to that. But it probably wasn't until like 2 or 3 years ago.
That's interesting. It's cool to see some of the names that you've mentioned of like people that you have worked with or, you know, managed and stuff like that. That's so to go from the stand-up side of it to looking out for and managing and taking care of other comics, that's really cool. Cause I feel like stand-up is so weird. It's because it's so fickle, is a lot of people have that, like, the attitude of it's a one person game and I have to do what I need to do in order to get to from point A to point B. So like to see people in it that like truly have that that energy and that mindset towards like paying it forward is great. Cause there's not, like, regardless of stand up, you know, just people in general, there's a lot of people that don't have that attitude towards shit. It's like, I don't really care what I need to do, but like at the end of the day, I'm worried about me versus anybody else. Like that's the part that sucks, is like there's so many people out there like that they just don't give a shit about just stopping to help somebody out, even though it like takes nothing to do it.
Yeah, and it's little things like picking up a meal for comics or a hotel room. Like, you know, it's from our club to, I went to Gotham Comedy Club for an event. It was 2 hours door to door, Midtown Manhattan. And so it's not far, but, you know, sometimes late at night or whatever, the comics want to, you know, need to get a hotel, like just little things like that. Just, you know, picking up a meal, just, you know, treating the talent fairly, because without them, and they're our biggest asset. So if we put on a strong product by having good comics, you know, then the audience were like, wow, we saw, you know, this comic, and they give us good reviews and want to come back again. But, you know, without that, you know, we don't have a product. We just have a stage.
Yeah. I mean, cause anybody could have a stage, and anywhere, anything can be a stage. You look at, you know, shitty open mics where it's just like a rug on the floor and a mic stand. And, you know, they still say, come into the stage, your next comedian. So it's like literally stage is just a word. It's just a matter of like, who's on it. I think that's like, that is very true. And that's very self-evident when you see people like genuinely start to put in work for stand up.
Yeah, this area of the rug.
Exactly. You're like, come into the rug, our next comedian, give it up for this guy. And you're like, cool, all right. Versus, you know, it's, I think it's about that treatment that you get. Cause anybody, you know, there's so many people, cause I used to do music before I did stand up. So it's like, I know from the time that I did that, there's a lot of promoters in music that are like, dude, I don't give a shit. Either you're going to sell 100 tickets and play this show, or you're just not going to do the show.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. It's and also I know there's a lot of free shows and stuff like that, but I did notice like when the audience is vested in it because they paid, we started doing paid open mics because now we're outside with the propane heaters and we have to charge $5. I don't want to make money off the comics. It just basically covers my expenses for that night. But I do notice that the comics are better and the audience is more engaged and invested in the show because there is that money exchanged.
Well, I feel like when you put a dollar amount on it, you're putting value to it. That's like the problem I think that happens with a lot of like bar shows and stuff like that. It's like, at least a lot of the ones that I've done, is you end up with that like that element of kamikaze comedy where you just show up and they're like, hey, there's a show tonight. And people are like, I just want to eat my fucking chicken wings. Like, I wasn't prepared for this. You see like a little flyer in the corner by the front door that says comedy night on Thursday or whatever. And all these people, like families and shit with their kids and stuff. And you have to try to navigate around them to not tell your dick jokes and make anybody angry. And it's like, you're not paying for, like, you get paid whatever by that bar. They're like, here's $50 for the show. And you guys all get free beer and pizzas. You're like, okay, cool, whatever. But it's like, no one's retiring on that. And no one's getting to the next show on beer and pizzas. Like, it's just the stage time is really all you're getting at that point.
I remember doing shows like that, like literally, like you just plug a microphone into a wall or a couple of speakers, and then you lower the music or the jukebox, whatever it is. And you're like, all right, you guys ready for some comedy? And literally 75% or more of the people are just completely shocked and taken off guard that you're like, oh, this is combat comedy. No one was expecting this. It was like a sneak attack. Then there was another producer that I stopped by his show. And just like you said, there's a little flyer. So he might've had 8 to 10 people. And he's like, I don't know why there's not more people here. And he goes over, it was a taco place down the New Jersey shore. And it was a bulletin board, maybe 75 to 100 flyers on the wall. And he goes, I put the flyer up. Nick, it took me like 5 minutes. He told me where the flyer was on there. And it took me 5 minutes to even see. And I'm like, and that flyer is not speaking to anyone. It's not barking. It just says comedy Tuesday, when, whatever day it was, you know, this. And it's like, yeah, that's why no one showed up, because no one's sitting there going, oh, what's there to do tonight? What's there to do next week?
Yeah, well, it's also like, who the fuck shows up to a restaurant with the purpose of like, let me check the bulletin board and see what they do here? You're like, I don't care. I showed up for beer and wings, or I showed up for whatever food. You know what I mean? Like, I came for tacos. I don't care about jokes. I remember one time I did a show, and I remember somebody was like, the host goes, are you guys ready for some comedy? And someone in the room goes, no. Loud as shit. And everybody was just like, ah, fuck. That's how this is going to go. That's how the next 90 minutes.
No and shut up are like the worst thing. Like, that's all we have. That's all we have. And if we're not going to get that, because that's one thing too, over the pandemic, I realized, even if we're doing shows outside, at least there's still that energy exchange of being in the same space where, and even we all have to adapt. Zoom shows, you're not feeling that energy exchange as you do. But I tell comics all the time when they come down to our space for the first time that, yeah, listen, comics have adapted, but so have the audiences. The audience are starved. They need so many people, whether they're a widow or a widower, or, you know, they just had a crappy 2020, 2021 now. Our shows have been the bright spot in their year, where they just want to get out and feel that normalcy of get laughing, and the laughter brings them through these troubling times. And that's what really makes my job fulfilling. I can sit in the back of the room and probably laugh harder than other audience members because now all my work is coming together and I get to watch it all unfold and watch the audience enjoy the comics probably more than I do because of that reason.
I feel like that in itself is super rewarding, especially, right, again, going back to the fact of you being someone who started as a stand-up and moved out of that role into more of a role in the production side of things. It's like, that to me is anytime I've ever hosted a show that I put together and I know that I put good comics on a show and I know that they're comics that are going to kill from start to finish.
Right.
I have that moment. Yeah. It's like top to bottom. You know that that lineup is airtight and you know that like for $5 or $10 at, you know, that I don't charge, you know, that much for local comics. You know what I mean? But like either way, whatever you're charging, but it's like, you know, $5 to $10 for like strong local guys that no one's ever heard of. And they show up and it's airtight for an hour and people are like, holy shit. All right. That was worth $5 to $10.
And you build like, your audience that way.
Well, yeah, it's like you have that moment where at the back of the room, you get to just watch 40, 50 people in a small club laughing at something that you put together. And you're like, hell yeah, dude, this feels good.
So I had the same business model and mindset prior to the pandemic and the shutdown was anytime people saw our logo, you know, Soul Joel's, you know, Soul Joel's comedy, they knew it was going to be a good show. Because yeah, the comics might have some TV credits. They've been on Comedy Central or The Tonight Show, Last Comic Standing, Sirius XM. But they're not billboard famous. They're not going to draw numbers. But they knew if they came to our show, they were going to laugh for that 90 minutes. So the same thing you just said. And they just knew to look out for it. We got reviews, build up our social media. You know, now it's a little different during the pandemic where we've gotten the bigger names. But that's always been our business model. Just book the shows airtight and the rest is going to take care of itself.
Well, so when you, before pandemic, you were brick and mortar, right?
Yep. Yes. Yeah. So inside, but our venue held about 140 people.
Okay. I feel like you've been exceeding that with all these outdoor shows for sure.
Yeah. It's been a little bit bigger than that, which is actually the first 3 months, half of March, April, May, and June, were terrible. I mean, it was just, you know, to try to survive and have a, you know, a full-time employee to have to pay for and worry about, you know, big boy bills. That was tough. But now from July 3rd, since we started the outdoor venue, since then has been the best thing that ever happened because we had a bigger venue, able to attract a bigger audience, a lot bigger comics, and to the fact that we outgrew our indoor space. So
is it in the same space it was?
Right next door. Yep.
Initially. So like, cause I saw, I think like early in the summer, I saw Mike Vecchione did, it was like outside in, it looked like just an empty field pretty much.
So he did the first show and, he asked my sister was there helping me work the door and, you know, she's befriended a lot of the comics cause you know, being in the business and she's seen countless amount of shows and now being an employee, she went to, you know, talking to Mike and we had a DJ open up the show and he's the DJ for the Philadelphia Flyers and the 76ers. Damn. At the Wells Fargo Center. Yeah. So, and he was there and the president of the Wells Fargo Center came down and told him that the Flyer season was over and he had a DJ like every time they went to commercial break, like knowing that he's just losing all this work, all those Ooh. Home games back like the first week in March. So we hired him to DJ our crowd and add a little bit of hype to it. So she goes over to Mike Vecchione and she goes, you know who that is? Because Mike started in Philadelphia with Kurt Metzger and Joe DeRosa, you know, Kevin Hart and, you know, Keith Robinson, all those guys. You know, they started in Philadelphia and then he moved, you know, he quit teaching and made his way to New York to do, you know, comedy full time. But he goes, shows, you know who that is? That's the DJ Perry, the DJ to the Flyers and the Sixers. And he goes, you know, you didn't have to do that, Deanna. You know, you didn't have to big time me in upstate. I am the headliner here. And he goes, Nick, he goes, that being said, do you think Joel will mind if I throw rocks at him? And like you said, it was, you can't make this stuff up. And she literally goes, she goes, absolutely, don't worry about it. Because we spent all day, the stage now is a 40-foot tractor trailer that from a truck that we turned into a black box. But we spent that day like making it, and then but it was on top of the hill and it wasn't actually in where the audience is. And Mike showed up with Justin Silver and he goes, "That's too far away from the audience. We got to be closer." So I had to take a 4x4 portable stage that I had and move it in to where the audience is, like right before the show started. And Mike's on top of this 4x4 stage. It starts thundering and lightning. And Mike starts going, "Do you know, does anybody else notice that there is 3 10x10 canopy tents, none of which are over top of my head, the talent, and it's raining?" And he goes, "Joel called this dirt field a amphitheater. And now I'm on top of it on the stage." And he starts throwing rocks at me. He goes, "I was just in a movie with Pete Davidson and Judd Apatow, the King of Staten Island, and now I'm in your amphitheater." He goes, "Where has my career gone?" It was so funny, dude.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, I remember seeing it like on his and Justin's like stories on Instagram and shit when they were at the show. And I remember being like, all right, that, because that was like the first time, obviously you said it was the first outdoor show. So it was like the first time I'd seen, you know, anything Soul Drill related, because I'm not in that area. But it was crazy because like fast forward, you know, and next thing I see is I see Normand, I see Sam Morril, I see List, I see Big J fucking had that whole fucking thing happen. And it was just like all these comics that I genuinely am like, damn, those are hardworking comics. And I just see it like their name on all these flyers. Greg Stone, I just, you know, I had Greg on last week. He was there. It's like, dude, so all these people.
Our team never stopped making it adaptations, and we kept improving every week. You know, a couple weeks later, we added sand to that lot, and just because it was kind of smooth, the empty field and some, because it used to be a yarn factory. So we kind of just, we put the sand on there. Our landlord matched it. So we bought 100 tons of sand, and he bought 100 tons of sand. And since then, we probably put another 20 to 25 tons of sand. And so 200 tons is like 9 tractor trailer loads of sand. Whew. It's huge. It's a lot. It's a lot of sand, buddy.
Yeah. That's,
it's like 4 inches. And you made that flyer a Big J going the heavyweight champ, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So so many people started tagging me in it and showing me. And because I also have a beard and Big J's kind of lost weight, and it was like Soul Joel, the heavyweight champ, but it also said the orphan stories. So I shared it, and the people that are comedy nerds and comedy fans, they loved it. But I think the general like friends on my social media were like, "I don't know what this is, because it kind of maybe looks like it could be me, but it's not." They were like, "I don't know what this is, but good for Joel." Right. I don't know what Joel's into now, but okay. All right.
That's great. Yeah. As soon as that happened, because I had been racking my brain, because I've just been trying to like spend time during the pandemic fucking drawing shit and doing whatever to keep myself busy. It's like, if I can't be on stage, I want to just draw funny shit that I hear comics talk about on podcasts and stuff. So I was like, you know what? That was one of those things that as soon as I heard it, I was like, what's something funny that I could do? And I was like, it'd be dope if I had him as Rocky, just fucking throwing his hands up. And then,
You know what's funny about that is I had actually reached out to Ari, and him and I had been emailing back and forth, and so because he was doing the yoga challenge, and I was like, oh, you know, if you want to come do yoga and comedy, and we were talking about some stuff coming up, and he goes, "Oh, by the way," he goes, "you definitely have to check out my podcast next week." He's like, I recap 2020, and I mentioned, you know, Soul Joel's being the best comedy club on the East Coast, you know, for 2020. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. But, you know, Ari, you know how he's like, I don't know where in the episode it was. I was like, all right,
probably because it's like a 2.5 hour episode, I'm sure.
2.5 hour, 7-part, 50 minutes. Lord. Each one's 50 minutes. So some people actually let me know. He's like, this is the episode it is, and this is the time mark. I listened to it. And I was so grateful. It was great. I mean, he ended up talking about it for like 20 or 25 minutes. And he goes, Soul Joel, the owner's name is Joel something. And I'm like, oh. Like, I was so close, Nick. I was right there. But it was so great. And then, you know, of course, people, my friends that come to, they are comedy fans now and I've met during the pandemic and all support my club. they're like, oh, I've met the commenting on my post and your flyer. They're like, I've met this Joel something. You know, he is quite nice. And I'm like, that's hilarious. Like, we were almost there.
Dude, that's how I feel anytime I draw. So again, that's like the thing is like anytime I draw something and I tag these comics on Instagram, anytime any of them like repost it or they like share it on their page, I'm like, oh, dude, that's awesome. And then I'm like,
yeah,
they'll have my art on their social media well before there's ever like a picture with me and any of them on stage together. But I'm like, all right, I'll take it. You know what?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Hey, get in where you fit in.
Dude, 100%. I'm like, yeah, I'd love to be like, you know, a peer as far as like being funny with them. But I'm like, I'll settle for being the guy that draws them as wrestling characters and shit.
Hey, that's great, man. That would take me months to do what you did. It's really cool. Man,
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, so like normally I would ask the highs and lows. I feel like they're 2020 is like, you know, that's gotta be, that's a double-edged sword. You know what I mean? Cause I feel like you culminated all this work that you'd been going towards to get brick and mortar for the club. You had that going. And then right after you have it, you know, you have to shift gears completely and then start doing everything outdoors.
So I would, there's a couple of lows. And last year I owned my house. I never went back and lived with my parents since I was 18 and went to college. I sold my house in New Jersey. It's about an hour away from here where I grew up, and moved in with my sister. She's about 10 minutes away and I'm living in her basement. That's where I am right now, you know, cause things are going so well. But we joke around that July 3rd show with Mike Vecchione, one of my biggest supporters, and you know, we made it, we have a, you know, staff and everything and making it through. A lady walks up after the show, Nick, and just hands me $100. Just hands me $100. And that night, like I told you, I always pay it forward. I pay the comics probably more than I should. I didn't make money that night, but I knew July was all about reminding people that we're open and figuring out the outdoor shows, making the adaptations. And now my sister and I have a running joke that I was like, when she does something great, because she's a real estate agent, you know, she's selling $1 million houses. And I'm like, did I tell you July 3rd at the Mike Vecchione show, I got tipped $100? Like not even comparable to what she's doing on these real estate deals. You know what I mean? Like, but to me, it was a low because I was just trying to survive. But it was also a moment where I knew it was a turning point. Like the lady just literally said to me, Linda Huffman, she goes, you're hurting right now. And I know it. She goes, but what you're doing for this community and the efforts you're putting in to give us this normalcy, it's so refreshing and rewarding to watch. So just take that money. And then she did it again in December for a Christmas card. And that, again, you would think everybody sees all this hype and sees the big name comics. Well, it didn't take until August for us to make money. And we started doing shows and I was recouping all the losses and all the loans I had to take out to keep the whole thing going. September, we were coasting. October, we were doing well, then started hitting some dips as the colder weather. Well, then that's when we ordered the dome. And November, December, and January, we just kept getting kicked in the teeth. Yeah, we had some good shows and some good things, but it was harder to remind people that we're still doing shows. We had socially distanced spaced heaters and we're making the necessary changes. But it was, again, it was like being back into July where we just had to remain open, putting on good shows to remind people that were there just to survive. And now we book Chris D, Andrew Dice Clay, Tim Dillon. And now we just got, so now it's like we're hitting that peak again. Everybody's like, you're killing it. I'm like, I'm killing it on social media and bookings. But just like being, it's almost like I'm 100% commissioned salesman.
Sure.
Although the ticket sales are good, those shows haven't happened yet. So I can't cash that money until the show happens. That money is not in my account. And a lot of it, you know, the comics are making, with the deals that we're making, whatever it is. But my accountant said, he's like, you're not in this to make money in 2020 and 2021. Just make sure you're still open. And we're still standing, buddy.
Honestly, man, you know what? For all things considered, you know, the ideal situation, sure, turn a little bit of profit, but I think the fact that you are maintaining and staying open through all of that, I think that's way more of a win. Cause like,
oh, absolutely.
Cause you're cutting your teeth like super hard on this thing. And yeah, like,
I call it ninja training. Yeah. There's literally the bullpen's empty, man. There's no more curveballs. This pandemic, the CDC, anything can throw at it. I mean, I've been producing shows for 15 years, from a casino to the back room at a bar show to a VFW, country clubs. There's no venue that you can give to me that I'm now outdoors. Space heaters and sand and all. We went from indoors to outdoors to heated tent to heated dome and countless adaptations, man. There's nothing that can happen that I'll be like, you know what? That's a surprise.
Yeah, honestly, at this point, I'm like, I keep hearing comics and I keep listening to comics doing the shows and talking about the shows because I'm like, because I'm not anywhere near there, I'm like, I wonder what he's going to change to it next. It's like one of those, like, I'm vicariously living through all these better comics being like, oh, so that's what he's done since the last show. Oh, that's what he's added since the last show. As soon as I heard Heated Dome, I'm like, what the fuck? This dude is changing the game.
Yeah.
100%.
You know, I want to actually thank you, man. I want to tell you this story. I just came out. I haven't told this publicly or a podcast, so I'm dropping this here first. Comics always come down and want to hang at the show. And we were at the Shane Torres show, and one of the comics that started with him, lives in New York now, started with Shane in Portland, came down and brought another comic. And they're in the back just hanging out. I didn't charge them. And the comic, I could see, I'm always on the lookout of people videotaping. They take pictures, it's fine, but comics are rusty, and a lot of times they're working on sets for either late night or their own album. And it's like, you know, being at the movies, you're not allowed to record. It's illegal in life. So this one guy, the friend of a friend, he's also like a low level comic. I see him like videotaping. I'm like, oh, maybe he wasn't. And then puts his phone in his pocket and looks behind me. And I'm like, that was shady. So I went over to Casey Aurora. I'm like, give me that comic's name. Give me that guy's name. And he sent me the thing, and he literally videotaped Casey on the stage, because right behind him is the Reading Railroad, which has interrupted a lot of our shows. And so he goes, oh, I thought trains were only going to be interrupting comics during 2020. Looks like it's going well into 2021. Tags the comedy club. And I go over to him, like, get up. I go, you think this is okay? You think this was okay to post? Get up, get out. Get out. And my manager who's been working with me had never seen that side of me. Like, I wrestled in college. I'm a black belt in karate. Like, I probably should do MMA. And I go, I should kick the ever-living shit out of you. I should throw you up against that building. I'm like, you're a comic? You call yourself a comic? You drove all the way down here? He goes, oh, it was an inside joke. I go, you tagged the club page. So not only is it illegal, you're a comic. It's illegal to record at shows, but you're going to tag the club? That is not good PR. Get the fuck out. And he was like, I'm sorry, man. I'm like, delete it. We shook hands. It's all cool. Another guy who said he's produced his shows all over the place. I'm like, how is this guy your friend and you let him tape in my club? I was like, there's just an etiquette to comedy, man. And that is not okay.
Whew.
No names.
Fuck yeah.
Is that a good way to end?
Oh, dude, that's a great, I mean, that's a great, great story. 100%. Oh, man.
At least it wasn't you, right?
Yeah, no, it definitely wasn't me. I haven't even been up that way. So it's like, that'd be a really long way to go for you to be like, I fucking saw what you did in my club, you piece of shit. Oh, no wonder why I said yes to do this. You're like, now I got you here. It's a one-on-one. Fuck you.
Are we live?
Like, yeah. That moment where I'm like, I don't know if I can air this. I just got called out.
That's so funny.
Dude, as soon as you said that, you were talking about yoking that dude up. I'm like, yeah, Soul Joel Rogan. There you go. That's your new shit. East Coast.
Yeah, Stone Cold Steve Rogan.
Fuck, man. But that's wild, though. Like, because I don't understand that mindset. Like, I don't know how people don't get that. It's like, it's not cool to record shit that's not yours. Unless you've got the okay. Obviously, if I was on stage and someone was recording me from the audience, I would assume that it's a friend of mine that I've given a heads up to, like, hey, can you record my shit? Cool, whatever, right. No big deal. But like, again, going back to the Louis thing, it's like, what the fuck? You know, it's like these comics, people are rusty. People are doing shit. So it's like last thing you want is someone fucking sitting in the audience doing some dumb shit. And then, oh, this is what we post. But it's like, dude, to tag the club, that's a whole nother level.
Yeah, the comics, whether they're working something out or they're figuring out the perfect way to word it, cut, trim the fat, put it in the right order. It's honing the craft. It's a process. And if they're not ready, knowing that it's being filmed, it's just not right. So and people all the time are like, oh, well, you got to have it up and writing and no filming. And we're working on that now. We ordered a sign to have a big banner on the side. So we can't say you didn't know, but it's illegal in life, man. Like it's, you're not allowed to do it on every, you know, movie, whether you go to the movies or it's a, you know, they have that disclaimer. It's an FBI federal offense. If you're videotaping and then replaying it, it's like, it's the same way with a music venue, even though everybody's got a phone and Facebook Live and everything. It doesn't mean that it's okay just because everyone does it. It's just, it's a crazy mentality to me. And I'm very protective over my brand and my product. Cause then if all these comics come down and they're doing it at our venue and I'm not stopping it, then that's my fault. That's on me.
Yeah. I mean, that's your name and your brand. Obviously that's, you know, and you really, you know, for the last hour been talking about all these things that, you know, lend to your credibility and your integrity. So it's also like one of those things of like, you're going out on a limb, bringing these comics to you. And the last thing you want is some fucking dickhead in the crowd taking their shit and then going back and telling it at an open mic somewhere or like, you know, or posting it online and then being like, what the fuck, dude? Hey, Soul Joel, what the fuck is that about? You're like, I had no idea. I had no clue.
Right. And by the way, speaking of the last hour, I talked about how my background is very bland and nothing's going on. I feel like you're in a toy store, man. Like you have a perfect background and setup and everything looks very in place, man.
I have a problem. I collect all these fucking toys and shit and I'm working on getting, I was talking to Greg about it. So I told you Greg Stone just did an episode last week. And he is a huge toy collector as far as like action figures and shit goes. And I was talking to him about these and I was like, yeah, I think I want to get rid of some. He was like, just do it. You'll feel great. Just get rid of them. And I'm like, yeah, maybe it is time to grow up. I should stop having less things in boxes around me.
So real quick, Greg, he used to, when I first started producing shows, he would flyer with me and hand out flyers. And we spent a whole weekend together down Atlantic City and the Jersey Shore. He came down to my show and you know, the comics, no matter what, they could be performing in, you know, the Brigada or Caesar's Palace, whatever it is, whatever the room is, the comics are going to make fun of something because that's what we do. We degrade ourselves and we make fun of the situation in some way as a way to, you know, to just to bring a little joy to people and not just go right into your jokes. So I told you, we put the next week after we had Mike Ficchione, we had Greg Stone and Louis Katz, you know, pretty much double headline a show. I had Greg feature, but then he, you know, came back to headline. And he went on stage and this, you know, Joey St. John, my general manager, and I are sitting there and we're not architects. We're not carpenters. And we put this flatbed truck 40 feet in this sand lot. Well, before the sand lot, just this. And it wasn't even, it wasn't at all level. And not like Nick, not even close. So Greg goes on stage and like he kept Joey, he goes, hey, if I feel a little off balance, it's because I feel like I'm getting pulled off the stage. And he takes the mic stand, puts it down, and it almost rolls off. And he goes, yeah, just so you guys know, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Give it up for Soul Joel. This stage feels like a, you know, a hazard, whatever he said in a joking way. So this husband and wife who had been regulars inside and now outside the club, born and raised in the town where we're at, Warriors Ford, he comes after the show and it literally doesn't matter, black, white, Republican, Democrat, I don't care. I just want you to come enjoy the show and forget your troubles for that 90 minutes to 2 hours. So he goes, do you know what I do for a living, right? I'm like, I have no idea. He goes, I'm a carpenter. And he goes, what are you trying to do with that stage? If it wasn't for Greg Stone making fun of me, this conversation would have never happened. Because he made fun of me for like a straight 10 minutes. Guy, and he goes, I know what you do. Do not tag me. Do not mention my name on Facebook. He takes 4 days off work, 2 days 1 week, 2 days the following week. And all I had to do was pay for the all the parts in at Home Depot or Lowe's, whenever we made the trips for all the wood and the paint, screws, all the everything else. He brought all the tools and we were just his assistants for those 4 days. And I have to refer to him as an angel living on earth. And if it wasn't for Greg Stone, that would have never happened. We turned this thing into a black box, you know, and it's amazing. But I have Greg Stone to thank for that, because if it wasn't him roasting me, it would have never happened, probably.
Dude, that's great, man. That's what it's all about, is
paying it forward.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like that really is that's all it about. That's all it's about with everything in comedy. It's like, as long as I've been doing it, every person that's ever like done anything for me or looked out for me along the way has said that exact same thing. Anytime it's someone that has a little bit more than I have doing something, they're like, yeah, man, this is how I was taught when I started. This is how it should be. And this is the nature of the game. And it's all about fucking passing it on to, you know, to the next guy. And then that person does the same thing down the road. It's fucking, dude, it's killer to see that. I mean, that's funny that Greg fucking talks shit about you to the point where someone was like, I gotta help you.
Right, right. But I mean, he did it tongue in cheek. Like, he just it was a real moment, you know, because he really did feel off balance. And when the mic stand almost rolled off the stage, I was like, oh, yikes. It's it's less of an exaggeration than I thought.
Well, Joel, what's the goal for 2021, man?
So the goal for 2021 is just keep the momentum, just keep it going and try to make it bigger and better. Always making it bigger, better than it was. Just have it, you know, every month, just keep going and just to get things back to where they were. But also last year in 2020, we hired 200 comics and musical artists. And we paid it forward by being open to give these independent artists a way to earn a living and remind themselves why they did this. And so I want to continue to do that and be a place where people can make a living and just be a member of the community and try to get back to where we were back in 2019.
Fuck yeah, man. Well, Soul Joel, everybody, look at that. Fucking keeping comedy alive in the Upper East Coast, you know?
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on. This was fun.
Dude, for real. Like I said, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to come out. I know you've got a lot of stuff coming up as far as shows. We kind of talked about some of those. But if there is anything and everything that you want to plug, by all means, go ahead.
So we have Andrew Dice Clay coming up in the middle of February, followed by, two out of the four shows are sold out right now. So there's still tickets available for him. Four shows sold out with Tim Dillon. And then in March, we have Russell Peters coming down. And in April, we have DL Hughley and Jim Brewer. So a lot of, you know, just go to Soul Joels. It's SouljoelS.com. And we're on all the social media platforms. So follow us and like us on Facebook, Instagram, and go to our website. Give us a Google review. It all helps, man.
Hell yeah. Well, dude, thank you again, man. I really appreciate it. This will be out on... it'll be out not this Thursday, but next Thursday. So I'll have that up and I'll make sure to tag you guys on everything. But like I said, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this and keep killing it, man. 100% keep killing it. Hopefully nobody, no more fights or anything crazy happen at the Thunderdome.
Soul Joel, the heavyweight champ, out. Thanks, Nick.
Take it easy, buddy.
Comedy build-ups and breakdowns.